I want you to put your hands together.
There goes to the neighborhood.
And welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause.
There goes to the neighborhood.
Welcome back to the Smokescreen Podcast, episode 47. Did we say that correctly?
47.
We have a special guest today. I found out a couple months back, actually, that I had a twin brother. Did not know this. And then I got my test results back and found out I did, and I found him. And the only way you can tell us apart is that he wears glasses. And that's it.
I've been excited about this.
Longtime supporter of the Smokescreen community back from the good old days. Apparently he's put something together special. I'm not sure what's happening still. Honestly, we'll see what happens. Mazuma 10,000.
Welcome, brother.
What's up, man?
How are you? Thank you for having me on here, Chris and James. Really appreciate it. Much like Doc Holliday, who was on a few weeks ago. We're real proud to be part of the community, and you're pretty gracious as on-air talent in being very welcoming. And
did you hear that?
Yeah,
he said on-air talent.
Yeah, on-air talent.
There's no talent here whatsoever.
Creators, we're real grateful in the community, obviously, that you guys are genuine folk. You're the same. I got to tell you, honestly, for everyone who's ever met you, you're the same in person as you are on camera. And that's, in this day and age, in today's world, finding people who are, the same in both aspects of life is, I tell you, it's a real privilege for me to find people like that. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. That's damn. It was nice.
Yeah, it's man.
Being nice,
and
man.
It was awesome hanging with you, 2 years in a row. That first year when you took over the live stream.
Oh, God,
was
that was
like,
so
man,
fun.
Mazuma, he's a real cool guy. And then it worked out. We got to hang out again.
I got to tell you, and the link is somewhere in the internet. But I got to tell you, first, vodka took over me.
Yeah, right.
I might have taken over the live stream.
Yes, that was fun for us to watch, though, because everybody was like, you got to stream for people who couldn't come for the first little protocon get together. And then we started one, everybody came in the room, and for us to sit back and watch that and just be in the chat and watch it was fucking hilarious, man.
I know. Finally, we got to put comments
into
the chat.
And kind of be on the other side of it.
Yeah. Stuck in some fun facts or something in there.
Exactly. So, we've had D. Brown, we've had Doc Holliday, and now Zuma. Three, I would say, to return the compliments, three of the core. There's a core group of this community that's been here a long time for years now.
K Dubs one time too. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. K Dubs streamed with us a long time ago.
Yes.
Before the podcast, I guess, technically.
Right.
Did we have started the podcast? No, I guess
we had not started it yet. Yep.
But man, so I don't know exactly. Zuma said he's basically snuck and retrieved questions from people. So however you want to do this, man, this is a wide open venue here, so we can do it however we want.
I think these questions are will fall into kind of four areas. Obviously, the core of it's going to be not the core of the questions, but
now are they multiple choice or?
Good, that's a good question.
But some of the core of the question or the core of the community, goes back to Game of Thrones and that real great shared experience we had, not just with the show but with the folks in the YouTube Sunday night streams, in the Patreon discussions, commenting on videos, also the carryover to Twitch as well. So I think that, there was at the core of this, there was obviously our shared experience of Game of Thrones. And I think I was a little bit later in, maybe I was, might have been season 5 when you guys started doing, or when I started noticing you guys doing the Sunday night streams. Was that season 5?
We started 6 months before season 7 with the streams. Because I had started the channel in episode 4 of season 5, then season 6, and then after season 6, we started the live stream saying, because they had that shitty after show.
Yeah.
That was
We had started doing recorded Q&As and stuff.
Oh, all right. So I started watching those. I don't know how long.
Yeah. So we had started doing recorded Q&As, and then it was a couple things actually. just for some backstory for people maybe new here, we started doing recorded Q&As. Then we had people saying, well, he's editing.
Mm-hmm.
We had both people will tell both of us that. They're like, we were editing and I was looking up the answers. So we said, fuck it, we'll go live and do it that way. But then that horrible after show came out.
Yep.
And we were like, we got to replace that time slot with something just on YouTube. We'll just go live on there and talk about it after the show. Because they're horrible.
And it worked out.
It blew up.
Yeah.
For a minute.
It was so fun.
But yeah, it was fun.
I think it was a unique experience kind of in media culture, entertainment. I think it's one of those things like, to a certain extent, Star Wars comes out. And some of us here in this podcast may be old enough to remember in the movie theaters. I don't want to date us,
right.
but we might be old enough to remember that. And, I got to tell you, every summer after 1978 or whatever it was, 1977, 78, when it comes out, every summer after that, you had movies trying to beat Star Wars, trying to beat summer blockbuster. And so to the extent that Star Wars changed the dynamics, the expectations, and the kind of economics, really, of that, I think Game of Thrones really expanded, what people think or expect about miniseries or media events.
No doubt, man. They're trying to find the next one all the time. That's right. What everybody's shooting for. And then so far, there's just no magic to it.
No. I mean, there have been some fun series, right? I mean, there's been some interesting stuff. But
yeah, fun. Yeah. But I don't think anything came close.
No, not something where not something where people wanted to talk about it in the office,
Yes,
exactly.
That's the thing right there.
Yeah, we had, The Mandalorian and The Witcher, and The Witcher was like, they blew their load on the first, week. They dropped it all, so there was no season around it. It was because we talked about this before. When Game of Thrones was on, every Sunday was like a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just nothing been even close to that. I mean, Westworld, the first season was okay. It was pretty good television, pretty good, actually. And it started getting up there. But after two and three, in my opinion, and a lot of people's, that kind of went down the shitter, too. So there's just been nothing, I don't think, come close. But, and I think they're going to try, though, with this Lord of the Rings and this other show, the prequel. But now that it ended that way, I don't think a lot of people are down.
But he's right that they have set a new bar.
Yeah.
And
it was like The Matrix again. Like you said, Star Wars and The Matrix changed movies.
It moved the expectations.
Yes.
It moved it up. And,
right.
And what people expected from a series kind of experience like that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we'll see that again. Like a Game of Thrones.
I don't think so. I don't care how much money they have to throw at it. It's got to be, there was something pretty magical about it.
And yeah, that's right. It is magical because there's been a lot of amazing shows that are just hugely, wildly successful. But this is different. This is a different animal. When you go to work and, everyone can talk about a show except for the one weird guy that's like, I've never seen one episode. Other than that.
There's always that guy.
There's always that guy.
And they're proud of it, man.
But then there's huge shows like Breaking Bad where like half the office talks about that.
Yes, exactly.
But Game of Thrones, man, it just went across the board. Everybody knew about it.
Absolutely. And that's what's happening now is I may like, The Mandalorian. Well, the other people like The Witcher because they don't like sci-fi or laser swords or whatever. So everything's split right now. And it's been that way since.
Well, I think also, if you think about, kind of where Game of Thrones sat, right? So you had a great Showtime series, historical series, The Tudors. So you got that medieval, Renaissance.
Right.
That whole castles and dresses and damsels and lords and knights and stuff like that. The politics, the intrigue, and the kind of romance there, that draws a very specific type of person. But then you draw a whole nother subset of the population that wants to see people fighting each other with swords.
That's right.
Right.
I'm not going to go on gender kind of roles or interests here, but I'm just saying you get people who are there for the intrigue, for the romance, the politicking and the drama. And then you get other folks who are there for the war and the blood and the sex. So I think when you talk about that, it's a much, you can't do that with the Mandalorian, because they're going to be people who are just saying, I see space shit, I'm not fucking interested, you know?
Yeah, some people, it's just, like you said, they automatically turn off.
Exactly.
They shut down.
It's the, even though the story is a story, it's just the furniture in the room they don't like. And I get it. I get it.
No, for sure. And the things, a lot of the things you've been talking about, like Lord of the Rings upcoming, Dune upcoming, The Witcher, and, you know, most of Game of Thrones was solid, well-written, thought-out source material, right? You know, you've got books that are there that are exhaustive, that have so much detail that the showrunners get to pick and choose what they want to do. And, you know, spoilers, when they started running out of source material, I really feel like 80 to 90% of fandom feels like that's when the whole thing went off the rails. And
I agree. Yeah, we've mentioned that before. Yeah, it's like as soon as the source material ran out,
boom.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, after season five, and some argue that, you know, part of season five or half of it or in the whole thing. So you got people who hate eight, right? And they, or then you have people, another group hates seven and eight. Then some people go back as far as like four and a half. You know, it depends on how heavy they are into the books. But yeah,
I'll share a comment from longtime friend of the community, Mother of Dragon. And she said,
Taryn.
She says, what do I got here? Season eight was the 2020 of Game of Thrones.
Yes,
oh,
indeed.
God, yes.
That's a good way to put it.
Yes, it was.
So she's not a fan. Let's just say she's not a fan of season eight.
No. It was so bad. It was so bad. We tried to like maintain, we were talking about this with Doc, I think, a little bit. We were trying to maintain like hope throughout these things. So like, oh, the next episode they'll reveal it or something, they'll change, and it just never came. It just kept going worse. Oh, God.
You know, I rewatched some of the after shows for season eight, episode 1, 2, and it just kind of was breezing through them, mainly because I wanted to just refresh some of the, you know, the names of people who are in the community that probably we haven't seen or heard from, or maybe thought about in a while. But, after the episode one, it's like, you know, people are like, I'm going to be a little honest, I was not amazed by that, right? Season two, people like, it was a little long. I don't know where it was moving, you know? And then like the kind of comments just start telescoping where people are like, yeah, I'm not liking where this is going to, like, you know, why would you send your Dothraki horse riders directly? And then, wait, I thought all the Dothraki were killed in the Battle of the Night King, and yet, now there's like another 100,000.
Yeah, they still got 20,000 or 30,000 in reserve. But for us, it was a little different in the sense of, we talked about this before, we had to set up everything right for these live streams. And so it was always so much pressure because we were trying to watch it and enjoy it and take notes to talk about it on the stream and do our little review. And then before we got into Q&A type of stuff, and we had to rush so much. It didn't really sink in to almost like 2 a.m.
Right.
When shit was over.
I don't know if it hurt or helped that we weren't able to stop and just talk with each other and go, holy shit, before we clicked go live.
Exactly.
You know, stream. Because what you guys saw was fresh, and we would start seeing comments and be like, oh, hell, I didn't even think about that. You know, because we hadn't had time to absorb it.
Yeah, we hadn't processed it all. It was just immediately jumping on, man.
Just to, tag on to what Taryn said, for me personally, 2020 has been like going into the basement of a pawn shop with Bruce Willis.
Damn. No shit.
Oh, holy shit, yeah, it's been bad.
So you're saying it's a bad thing? For the avoidance of doubt with the people here, that's a bad thing.
It's bad, yeah. It's been bad.
It is. It's fucking horrible, man. Just in every aspect. Just all aspects of everything. We're in fucking clown world is what we're in, too. Anyway.
Oh, we really are, man. You know, and we're jumping around here, but because as these things come up, I remember the questions and, you know, I want to tie it into some of the questions that people asked, you know, whatever, give this a little bit of a structure, but not much. But, you know, on this whole thing of COVID 2020, And just, you know, a lot of people across a lot of different geographic places, occupations, vocations, what have you, just being put out this whole year. I mean, you know, Steph Snow, another longtime viewer, mod on the channel, all that fun stuff. You know
Steph Snow.
She was kind of saying, like, look, we, you know, this is, if we could have had some season 5 after show stream chats, but had that in 2020, you know, you might have been so shitty about 2020.
Man. Yeah, that is true. That is true. Because we said that a lot too. It was so much fun with all the, like, the rushing and all that stuff we were just talking about. It was therapy for us too.
Yeah, it was.
And that's what made it suck even worse. Not just that it ended badly, but this just
that it ended. Period. Yes, exactly.
You know, and you know, we've done a few streams here, you know, since season 8, but it's not. I mean, it's still fun, but it wasn't the same when you had that thing to rally around. Is, I guess, what I'm saying.
Yeah, she brings up a good point.
Yes,
had that, you know, been this year, that would have brought some joy into people.
Yeah, especially with all everybody being locked in their fucking houses, right, and all that kind of stuff too. Kind of shit, you know, you didn't think about back in those days. And I'm saying those days like it was fucking 30 years ago. I mean, we're literally
back in olden time.
You know,
and something else I didn't think about is Steph Snow needs to get a hat because her initials would be on it.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Get a smokescreen hat.
Her Steph Snow, her moniker.
Yeah, her moniker. Yes, exactly.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, we have the only couple hats in existence. They Doc ended up rescuing us some more.
We've got some merchandise questions later on from Big
Cat. Oh, Lord, we don't have any merchandise.
But also again, Steph Snow and Mother Dragon, Taryn and Steph. You know, they both kind of commented at one point. I think D. Brown said the same thing. You know, I think for a lot of us, we miss the Sunday streams almost as much as we miss that experience of seeing each new episode of Game of Thrones before it started sucking donkey dick. You know?
We were just talking about it before we got on with the call with you. Actually, that's weird.
Yeah, we were, and I streamed 2 weeks ago. Or last Sunday, it's not the same. It's not the same when James ain't there, and then it ain't the same without the show there. But it, you know, it still could be done. But it's just you try to think of it from a topical thing, right? I mean, it would just be a free for all, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah,
but
that's something we need to think about doing, especially. Okay, think about what we just talked about in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, how much better would it have been in 2020 if we had that? Well, we don't have Game of Thrones, but we do have the ability to stream.
That's right.
Give it a freaking honest, you know, try to see if, you know, we could bring some joy out the last couple months of this year. I don't know. I think I'd be down.
We could do it.
We need to talk about that.
I think that's good, because that's another common theme for a lot of the people and a lot of the questions that we got. You know, and I think that, you know, some people, you know, everyone's had a rough go of it this year. There's no one, I think, that got out of this without feeling down or in the dumps or kind of sad or whatever you want to call it.
And, right.
You know, I think, you know, longtime viewers, you know, again, myself and the kind of the roll call of people here I've gotten questions from, we're, you know, sometimes we're concerned that you guys may be getting down. And so I think that comes through too. You know, we you've got a very empathetic community here. And, you know, Steph Snow saying, you know, hey, where's James? Is he doing all right? Chris, are you all right? You sound a little down. Are you okay? Stuff like that. I think that a lot of these people just, we just genuinely worry about each other. And, you know, you're kind of our, you know, you're our kind of visual presence on the interwebs. And I think that, you know, people just want to know that everyone else is okay, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Right.
Man, this is really, this could get me emotional. But that's cool. I like hearing that. And I've had a rough run, and I always told you guys back in the day, back in those days, I thought I was having a rough time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now that I really am,
right,
I'm like, damn. You know, so
let me go back to that.
So yeah, I could use some of that again, because we like Chris said earlier, we always said it was therapy for us. Anything else was just a bonus. We're great.
Yeah, there was so many times when we were like, you know, kind of in the background, like, damn, we not that we didn't want to, but just feeling like, oh, we got to stream, we got to get all this shit going on and set up, and we got to sit down and turn the lights on and watch the show and take notes and that kind of thing. And sometimes you didn't feel like doing it, but every single time was like, after, you know, you settled in after the first, what, 15, 20 minutes, of, or maybe not even that, you know, and we go take a break or after the stream was over.
That's what I hear they say.
So glad we fucking streamed.
During first break, we would always look at each other and say, man, I needed that.
Yes.
Man, I feel so much better already.
It was more of the hassle around it. But then once it started, like I said, therapy for us. But I don't know, like James said, I mean, I've had my mind buried in this book now. Like, you know, I've been working on it for 2 years, but really since I moved, I really, really got into it hardcore. But it's the same thing for me. I've had rough spots. I've had some good things happen this year. I got to move finally and all that kind of stuff. And we've got this studio we're working on visually and all that stuff as well. But it's, you know, to watch this whole thing crash and burn, you know, because the Game of Thrones ended and all that kind of stuff has been rough, you know. And now I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do, what my path is, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, yeah, it's definitely a thing.
Yeah, if I'll be honest, probably the last 3 or 4 days, that's been this recurring theme when I daydream or whatever, is it's time, James, you know, what are you going to do? I'm ready to make a good push towards something new in my life. So yeah, man. I don't know. I'm sorry. I know I sound down. I wish you could feel how I feel inside. I feel really good. This is bringing up some good memories. But yeah, so I'm optimistic, and I think we got something to think about here.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, I think, you know, the message that really comes across that I observed was that, you know, look, man, we'd like to be there with you for that journey. At least as it is kind of, you know, through YouTube, through streams, whatever it ends up being. I think that, you know, we're all interested in just in general, getting the fuck out of 2020. And
yeah, right.
Getting everybody out of this goddamn, you know.
Yeah, I've seen the joke, man, that on the 31st, it's going to flip to like 1260 instead of fucking,
oh, yeah,
you know, or some shit like that. But no, I mean, yeah, I get it, man. And I feel the same way, actually. It's just, I don't know. It's just been weird. It's been weird trying to find a new, because, you know, I'm sure it came across in my one-off videos after season 8 through, you know, various ones. There were some things I was really pretty excited about, like The Witcher and stuff. But I'm sure it came through in a lot of videos, and I didn't do a lot because I felt like, you know, you could probably see I was not the same in the sense of feeling good about everything, whatever. When you see everything kind of burning around you, it makes you, you know, it affects you. So I'm sure that came through on some, at least some one-off videos.
Well, I think people were concerned. I think people were concerned.
Well, it feels good to have somebody worried.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's cool that this whole thing ended up being a big Mazuma ruse to where he snuck around and got questioned.
Exactly.
But no, I mean, that's cool, though. That's cool that people were thinking about it.
Things for people to look up in Urban Dictionary. I did want to kind of mention, like, so clearly a lot of this stuff is Game of Thrones, and it was all about Game of Thrones, watching new shows, the fun theorizing we had, you know, the fun theorizing we had, the fun we had going through your videos, Dragon Raised by Wolves series, a lot of that stuff, the, you know, R plus L equals J, all the fun stuff that really got, you know, got everyone digging around. You know, there's a small unknown Canadian YouTuber that did a lot of sleuthing videos. So, you know, that content was out there too.
Yeah. What happened to her, man?
I don't know. It's probably
sleuthing videos. That rings a bell.
But
she was growing really quickly at one time. She just kind of vanished.
So that was kind of at the core there. And then you got people who want to know kind of next steps. What are, you know, other works, other related works, the sequels, the prequels, the other things, other new, what could be the next new fun series? There are a lot of questions about that. And then, you know, some people obviously just, you know, we've got some IRL questions for you. So there's going to be some real life questioning.
Oh,
cool.
Oh,
of course, you know, there might be a few, one or two zany questions in there.
Cool.
That's fine. We're zany people. We did. Hell, we've already done, you know, Never Have I Ever on this fucking podcast. So there's not much we want to talk about.
Well, so because you just said that, I think it ties into one of the questions we got here from longtime viewer, Natalie, stop saying dirty, Sanchez.
Oh, low.
Dirty Sanchez.
Yeah, no.
That's funny.
Sleepy Lurky.
Sleepy Lurky.
Natah.
Wants to know, you know, and oh, I think that there's a good subgenre of, we can talk about your Tinder profile that I set up.
That's right.
The dating that you and James are enjoying now as you know, men of the world. But Natalie wants to know two questions, really. Do you take your dog, Riddick, do you take him to the doggy parks down there? Is he a weapon? Is he a part of the arsenal that along with your charm is what?
Oh, I see. I see. You
know, to kind of confuse and kind of enchant the women of the
That was the idea, actually. to this day, it hasn't worked, but that was the idea. No, he does go everywhere with me. Yeah. We go to some parks some, but that's mostly geocaching. But yeah, he goes with me everywhere I go. And that was the idea. There's been times I pulled up and his head's out the window and there's, you know, there's a nice looking lady walking by and Riddick's supposed to get their attention, but he don't talk to people, man. You know, he's a good dog.
He is, man. And honestly, that is an angle. I mean,
oh yeah,
that is an angle. That works. If you want an icebreaker.
That's right.
Like, just take a dog with
let
you.
Let him off the leash. And, oh, I'm so sorry. But he could be a weapon. He could be.
He could be.
You know, I think maybe in that essence, he might be too large. I think the chick magnet dogs might be, are they usually smaller? I don't know.
I don't know. Is he fluffy enough? I don't know. He's pretty damn gorgeous.
Is he as cute as perhaps if you had a pet chinchilla?
Right.
Right, in a cage. Pet my chinchilla.
I keep looking at him. But maybe he's a little less approachable. But if they could just see him in action, if Chris was out there throwing the ball, you really do need to go to some dog parks now. I'm not going to let this die now. Now that I'm hearing this. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Well, you know,
Riddick, you going to be the wingman?
Exactly. Well,
he's over there like, what the fuck are y'all talking about? He knows we're talking about him.
So, I mean, you know, there's a good future in being a chick magnet. For Riddick, apparently, so that's good. Quick follow up to that from from Natalie and myself as well is, you know, major league pitchers before the game, Michael Jordan before the NBA Finals, they have a ritual, they have a specific pregame. Do you have a specific pre-date ritual? For example, do you trim the bonsai before a big date? Before a big date. To flog the dolphin, you know, just take that tension out. Maybe give the undercarriage a special wash. Like, what's your pregame ritual before kind of a big date there?
Do you have a pregame? I just clean up, man. That's all.
I know what he's saying. It's something about Mary.
Yeah, I don't empty anything out. I don't feel to empty the tension, but I made maybe extra clean. I don't know. A little extra scrubbing.
Yeah, I'd
trimming.
Say,
you know, trimming.
Man in the beard. What are we talking?
I don't own any stuff like that. I don't own like cologne anymore. I don't own any like beard oil. I don't really have a real beard. I have a shaggy type of thing. So he's got the real beard with beard oil. That type of thing.
Yeah. If I'm going on, I guess if I'm going on a date, I may be just a little bit. I don't know, man. I'm ritualistic without a date involved. Everything. Just do everything the same way all the time. It depends if it's like a first date.
Oh, all right.
I guess, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't take a Viagra with me, you know, on a first date. Right. Not going to be like.
Just show up with a lot of confidence. 3 Viagra, 20 condoms, and you're ready. Yeah.
But no, I'm a religious groomer anyway. So I don't think I do anything extra.
I'm the same way. Like, I don't miss a day.
I would wash my car, probably.
A little bit. Yeah. Stuff like that, for sure. I take a shower every day anyway. I don't miss one ever, very rarely, and it's always the same. So maybe just a little extra attention to things. That's all. the standard stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, but something besides a black T-shirt. I'll dig out my other clothes that's got collars and buttons and shit.
Would you ever say wear a jean jacket with jeans?
Oh, low. No, I don't own a jean jacket anymore.
Back in the day, I would.
Yeah, back
sure.
in the day, sure.
And they're making a comeback now. I've seen some jean jackets, and I've thought, man.
Yeah, we were talking about getting some and, you know, again? Getting Sharpies out and doing Megadeth and Metallica and all that kind of shit on the back of them again. I think that'd be free.
Everything's coming back.
It's weird. Everything's cyclical, man. These kids don't understand that we've already done all that, and our parents did it before us. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, at least I think that, you know, the hair bands and the metal bands that we had, Motley Crue, Poison, you know, all those kind of bands there. We should probably mention Van Halen in there somewhere. You know,
it's been a fucked up year for celebrity deaths too, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eddie Van Halen died today. That's just crazy.
Well, and also the other guy, famous, I Can See Clearly Now, that guy, Nash, Johnny Nash, I think it's Nash.
Oh, yeah. What, he died today?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Wow.
More recently.
See, that one, I missed that. Wow.
Yeah, same. The news segment with Mazuma.
No, I'm just telling you, man. What I was saying was, you know, a lot of music we had in the 80s was at least it was an offshoot of Zeppelin, Floyd, AC/DC, some of that stuff, the hard rock stuff that you had in the 60s and 70s, Rolling Stones, right? And then metal is just kind of the Guns N' Roses flashier kind of version of that.
Glam.
You wouldn't say it was a recycle of it, you know? And, you know, with like the movies today, we're rebooting and recycling everything. Can't write a goddamn new movie, you know?
I know. It's so crazy. And if you stumble upon a movie that is a new concept, you give it way more merit just for that. It could be a pretty crappy produced movie, but if it's a new concept, it's like, wow, that's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, we were talking about that the other day randomly, wasn't we? We were just like, there's nothing. Nothing's ever really original, but there's not been. We couldn't think of original stuff recently. We mentioned the last original movie may have been The Matrix. I think that's what was my example.
Right.
Yeah, there's just nothing original anymore, and this music is definitely not. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of kids, because I know my daughter, your daughter, our kids that age, they're listening to our old music.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
It's really cool.
I think that's cool.
Oh, tying question. No. Eddie Van Halen. How much did he feature in that Walkman you had in the 80s? Cassette tapes, Walkman.
Oh, my God.
I had the, I was lucky enough to get the Sport Walkman, which was a little bit more durable.
Yeah.
Was that the colored one?
I think it was yellow.
The yellow? Yes.
Yellow. Yeah. Yeah. Not just the regular.
Yeah. I had the regular black one. I remember the yellow one, though.
Hey, try to buy one of those now.
No shit.
I'm not kidding you. Those yellow Walkmans, they're so expensive. But he was pretty prominent, because see, when I was young and I was coming up, you know, 1984 came out with Jump on MTV. It was so huge,
right?
So I jumped on that, right, and that album. But then as I got older, I went back to Van Halen 1 and Van Halen 2, you know, and really fell in love with that. Because I don't know, I was always more Van Halen than Van Hagar, but still liked Van Hagar. Mm-hmm. So, you know, They're just amazing. The longevity and to have two really successful singers like AC/DC.
I was never a huge Van Halen fan except for 84 and all that. And with David Lee Roth, right, when he joined, that was kind of my little era of Van Halen.
I think, you know, I'm not here to speak ill of the dead or anything, but I used to be all big into that drama, and it really seemed like Eddie brought a lot of those arguments and things on himself. It seemed like that he could never make up his mind about things, and he really, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know enough, but I mean, I know singers are prima donnas a little bit anyway, so there's that aspect.
Rock stars, right? So when rock stars are like, that guy was such a pain in the ass to deal with, it's like,
yeah,
you're all rock stars.
Yeah, right? Rock stars.
So it was like Eddie Van Halen having an ego that, you know, was bigger than David Lee Roth's.
Right.
The band name was Van Halen.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. That was always the weird thing to me.
You know, I had to apply for trademark easing to get Smokescreen East. You know, I'm lucky I got that. Otherwise, it was like Teriyaki Chris.
Yeah, no, look, I told you, take Smokescreen East, man. I told you. He was like, should I go with Teriyaki Smokescreen or what? I know. I said, no, Smokescreen East. That sounds cooler, man.
East. Yeah, Smokescreen East. So, you know, I mean, like, I can't be out there trying to take the Smokescreen name. I mean, I'm Smokescreen East, you know.
Yeah, we just slap a little E on the side of the logo and you're good. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so SSE.
That's right.
I love it.
Oh, shit. Yeah, but that I actually did get into some of that drama though too. Like, you know, you never knew when Guns N' Roses came out, you never knew that Axl Rose would end up being a fucking weirdo.
I know.
And then we watched all the Motley Crue stuff. Hey, fairly recently, actually.
Slash and he almost got in fights or something like that.
Yeah, he was a prima donna, like James said. And then we got into Metallica. That's my favorite metal band. And we went, you know, we watched Some Kind of Monster fairly recently and just going through all that stuff. So I'm getting those little rabbit holes occasionally still, you know, like, because it was never the same with that particular example. It was never the same since Newstead left. And I've always wondered why the hell. And I've heard all their reasoning now, but still should let him back in. You know what I'm saying? Nothing against Rob. I'm just saying.
The same.
I know.
Was Lars Ulrich, right?
Yeah, he's a drummer. Yep.
Okay. So I'll just tell you a little story because I feel like you guys tell so many stories. I'll just give you a little quick 30-second story just because it's a fun one. But, you know, back in the late 90s, the Yankees were winning a lot of the baseball.
And
one of the postseason games, I walked into a bar and it was David Wells, one of the starting pitchers, Lars Ulrich, drummer Metallica, and Sean Penn sitting there, the three of them just sitting there next to each other, not in like, you know, one of these fancy downtown clubs, just in a regular bar, and there were the three of them, and it was the three of them just sitting there. What, you know, what I would like to know is, what are those guys talking about? Like, what kind of fun, crazy conversations do they have? I mean, I feel like if some people heard the kind of pre-show where James was, you know, inquiring about sex toys and, you know, where do you store them? Right? You know, like, where's the fleshlight? Fleshlight's in the dresser. The fleshlight's in the... drawer where it should be. Where would you
know? We were just making sure, you know, you want to make sure you didn't have anything showing.
Getting the real doll. I mean,
it's just to the left out of frame right there.
She did not want to go. She was angry with me.
I can totally see David Wells hanging with them though. I'll be honest with you. He was a rock star.
Hard drinking, rock and roll stuff. You know, David Wells, you know, at least from his public persona, wasn't one of those, you know, I'm gonna go get 20 bottles of champagne and go sit in a club and, you know,
right,
dance the night away. He seemed more like a guy who was just gonna drink some beers, listen to some rock and roll, you know.
Yeah, and then go through a perfect game.
Exactly.
That's cool, dude. Did you approach them?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
You actually, I do have a slightly bizarre story. Because it's me. So, you know, similar bar. Because also David Wells, you know, roughly lived in Manhattan in my vague neighborhood. And, you know, if you're not looking for, again, like these champagne type clubs, you've got normal bars, sports bars, Irish pubs, et cetera. Right. But so I think this is, he comes up from Baltimore. He's acquired in the off season, or he's a free agent signing in the off season, comes up from Baltimore. And so that's maybe 97 or 98. I don't know if it was 97 or 98, whether he was there the year that they lost to Cleveland or he came in right there for that magical 98 season. But anyway, so I see him in the bar. I've got a pitcher or two or beer in me. And at the same time, the Yankees had this guy, this Japanese guy, who's a big signing, Hideki Arabu. And so Hideki Arabu had kind of a decent rookie season, had some high, had some 93, 94 mile an hour stuff, maybe some curveballs, but in his kind of sophomore endeavors and kind of later on didn't do so well. But anyway, so I see Dave Wells in the bar. And like I said, I got a few pitchers in me. And pitchers of beer.
Damn, I forgot. We're talking about an actual pitcher.
He had a few pitchers in him. Yeah. Oh, shit. Okay.
A few pitchers of beers. And I walked up. I said, hey, look, man, do you need another fat Asian guy?
No, you did not.
Swear to God. Because I see Arabu's having problems. I've been coaching my sister's little league team, and I strike the shit out of him all the time.
Oh my God. I bet he loved that.
Fuck
dude.
Them kids.
he was a little bit unsure what to say. His actual response was, well, you got to talk to George. You got to talk to
him. Damn. That's great.
So that being, you know, obviously George Steinbrenner, owner of the Yankees. But I felt like if there was going to be a Husky agent pitching for the New York Yankees, why the fuck couldn't it be me?
That's right, man.
You guys may have observed that it might be a little uncensored at times.
Yes.
I mean, I'm just saying it could have happened that way. So
I'm not going to go into the story here, but I think I have told it before. But yeah, I've talked to Steinbrenner a couple times, man. That was an adventure. He was such a cool guy, man. And honestly, I used to work down at the Plant City Strawberry Festival in Florida. And George would come over there and put on a vest and pick up trash just like anybody else.
We're over down in St. Pete's or somewhere over near St. Pete's?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I went to Legends Field down there maybe the second year it was open. And and that's where I met George twice and talked to him twice. But then I was working... George Steinbrenner. Okay. And then I saw him at the Strawberry Festival, like picking up trash. He would go down through there just like anybody else, pick up the trash and then take it to, they had the centralized trash bins all throughout the, you know, the midways. And he would just take it and throw it in there and people would approach him. He was so approachable. He had nobody with him. It was really cool. He was a cool guy. He got a lot of flack, but I thought he was a really cool guy.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, one, we've never heard that story. I mean, I don't know who you've told that story. You never told me that story.
About meeting Steinbrenner and getting thrown out of Legends Field because I was drunk.
Yo, there's the other piece.
Okay, yeah, well, that part I definitely didn't hear.
Because, yeah, it was like right there at the old Tampa Bay, the Big Sombrero, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers old stadium. And yeah, I got thrown out of there. Me and my buddy got thrown out. We were drunk and... Then we were surrounded by security guards. Well, then
the immediate thing that caused you to be asked to leave the park.
Okay. Was we first, before we went and talked to Steinbrenner, I wanted to see Doc Gooden pitch. So this was 96, the year he threw his no hitter.
Yeah.
And I went down right behind home plate to watch him pitch drunk.
Okay.
And didn't have the ticket to sit there. And so the ushers came. Oops. And there was a big argument that ensued because Doc was like, he was my man when I was young. And so anyway, yeah. Well, on the way back to our seats, this guy from out in the parking lot before the game, he was wearing a Boston Red Sox hat. Mm-hmm. He was like, you rednecks can't stay in your seats, can you? And we were like, what are you doing? And he said, I've been up there talking to George Steinbrenner. We're like, yeah, right. And he was like, no, he's right there. And we saw him sitting there in his section. But you could walk right up to the side wall of it. Yeah, but there was no glass or anything. It was open air. And he was so accessible. and we walked up there, and my buddy had a Cincinnati Reds hat on, and he was like, "You think I'm going to talk to you guys with that Cincinnati Reds hat on?" Because at first he was ignoring us, and I was like, "Just wave at me. I'll be happy with that." And he's like, "You think I'm going to talk to you guys, and you're wearing a Cincinnati Reds hat?" So I raised up my hat. I had this denim floppy hat, and I raised it up, and I had a Yankee batting helmet on under it. You know, because I'd signed up for a credit card out in the on the way in, so you I had
a free helmet.
Yeah, cheap ass batting helmet. Yes. And I was like, "How about this?" And he gave me a thumbs up, and I was like, "Oh man, he just gave me a thumbs up." And by this time, there's like six guards around us, and they were like, "Okay, we're taking you to your seats." And I was like, "Do you know who we're talking to?" He said, "I don't care who you're talking to." I was like, "He could shut this whole game down and turn the lights off if he wanted to," and so they took us over there to our seats. And my buddy's twin brother and my first cousin were the other two people that were with us. And they were not there. They had gone to concession stand and they had our ticket stubs. And the old people who were sitting around us would not vouch for us.
Can't imagine why.
So he kicked us out. Long story short, we had a great story, but the story got even better because we went back sober and watched them play the White Sox a few days later. Steinbrenner was up there and we walked up there, and when I gave him the ball, I said, "Would you sign the sweet spot?" He said, "Oh, they're all sweet, aren't they?" And he signed it, and then he said, "You guys look like y'all feel a little bit better today," and that made it all worthwhile, because right. We were like, he remembered us.
He remembered.
Yes. So that was my Steinbrenner story. That was really, really cool.
Wow. Hey, you know, I mean, it was memorable for him.
Yeah, exactly. Two Southerners. You know who we're talking to? He can shut his whole shit down.
Let me put the tap in.
I'm sure that's what it sounded like to him.
Oh, I'm sure.
At some point later that day, he's like, "Man, I wonder who those gentlemen were." Colorful. Well, the one that I always felt pushed the limit a little bit more.
Damn, you got a neighbor out there blowing the horn, man.
Yeah.
New York City.
She works hard on the street.
Your call girl has arrived.
Exactly. A first for a Smokescreen podcast.
You're not supposed to be here for another 30 minutes, for Christ's sake.
Hey, just because you told that story, James, want to switch gears a little bit here, something more seriously. And question from Nicole Warden of the North.
Nicole Warden of the North.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I know this is going to hit hard. It's going to hit home a little bit here. You know, it takes some time to answer this, but Nicole Warden wants to know, do you think the depiction of rednecks in the media these days is fair? How do you guys deal with that? I mean,
you're making this up.
She legit asked that question.
Okay. I have hung out with you. That does. You would do that. Okay. All right.
We went camping. Remember?
You know, I don't know. I know that sometimes it seems to me, and you know, Chris will answer, but I feel like sometimes you get a bad rap. But then again, I don't know, man. Sometimes,
yeah,
they come across as the lovable country guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I know it started for me. It started with YouTube type of thing. It started with a lot of those redneck comments. You know, you can't read, and we made fun of that with Monkey Man. Back in the day. But it's like the more the channel grew or something. I don't know. Most people were, it was all love, or I love y'all's accents, or that type of thing. So, you know, it's been mixed, but I think in general, it used to be probably worse, I'd imagine.
You can't get worse than like Deliverance.
Right. Well, yeah. That's probably still the general consensus. We got a comment just the other day on the podcast. We fucking talked about Helen Keller. And about an old theory since 1911 or whatever fucking year it was. I mean, we literally just discussed it. We don't believe it. We didn't like attack her character. You know, we didn't anything. it was just a question of like, did she really learn all that, or was she being used by somebody? That's all we talked about. And we got another comment about, we got to fix those schools down yonder.
Oh yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like, come the fuck on, man. Did you even listen? So occasionally we'll still get stuff like that, but for the most part, it's been fine. Like I said, it started off for me, a couple of those things, and that kind of went away for a while. And because I used to want to save those, what I called hate comments, to actually do videos on them, but we never got enough, you know, oddly enough. We got the couple, we did the little monkey man thing, making fun of it, but other than that, it's just here and there. So I think there's still probably some association with Southern slang for uneducated, because that was her argument.
Now, is the proper term uneducated or unedumacated?
I don't know. That's probably Alabama, Mississippi. Yeah. There, you know, the further you go down, the more twang and reshaping of words. But you know, it's like somebody had a good point. All words are made up, so what was that?
Nothing.
Well, you know, honestly, like if you just think about country music.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not a big fan, you know. I like to listen to like old Hank Jr. and stuff like that. Only when I'm in a certain mood and haven't in a long time, David Allan Coe type, that kind of outlaw type country, Johnny Cash and all that stuff. I used to like that kind of stuff, but let's say Garth Brooks, he crosses over and becomes as big,
yeah,
popular as you can get, right?
Thing, right?
But to me, still, I would say that just because, you know, he's country, that he can't be viewed through the same lens as any other comparable singer. I think people would think, yeah, he sings good and he's entertaining, but he's probably a dummy. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I wasn't prepared for the question, but I'm just thinking out loud, because you said in media, do I think they're depicted a certain way?
Definitely still, because I mean, you've seen that in a lot of movies and shows. You got the redneck. I mean, hell, they make fun of them and stuff like Joe Dirt, for Christ's sake. But there's some still stigma, but it's not like it used to be, I wouldn't imagine. But you know, we still get those occasional things like that. That made us mad, not because it was it was just the way it was from somebody up north who has been around a long time, actually.
Yes,
but it wasn't about being a Yankee. It was about somebody who's been around a long time and used to be a part of this community.
All of a sudden,
it was like a condescending, you know, basically saying y'all are uneducated from the South.
Yeah, and that was weird. I almost commented on there that this is the worst comment I've ever read from a long-time listener.
Exactly.
But I didn't, and
little fired up there, huh?
But I'll tell you this. I'll tell you, and I'll get off the country music. I'll tell you why I don't really like it. Is because it almost only, to me, they only sing about cliche stuff, yep, like country cliches.
That's the way I thought when I was a
barefoot,
kid.
Barefoot, dirt road,
yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
That kind of stuff.
My wife went off my best friend, and I sure do miss him.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so weird, you know. It's like, okay, you can be country, but you don't have to like put it in every line of your song.
Yes, and what bothered me too was later on when like Garth blew up and became more of a pop star. Then you had all these fake country motherfuckers.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm the same way. I liked some old classic stuff. It's kind of a mood thing, like you said. I can sing a lot of Garth Brooks songs, but I can also go back to some Conway Twitty, you know,
yeah,
or Randy Travis.
Yep.
But overall, I've just never really enjoyed it because it was, like you said, it was the same kind of cliche stuff, and I never enjoyed the twangy shit, you know what I mean? So when it crossed over to like Garth, it was more rock, I guess, more like kind of rocky,
yeah,
type.
Doesn't Shania Twain technically consider herself a country artist?
Yes. She does, yes.
Yes.
Canada, of course.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
And you know, well, and
but she could cross over to like the mainstream music awards and the country music awards.
Yeah,
or somehow.
That was with a lot of heavy airplay on MTV, yeah, and stuff like that. And plus having Mutt Lange as a husband to
image consulting and a lot of that other stuff played in with how they marketed her and all that, mm-hmm, stuff.
Yep.
and her being not unattractive.
Yeah, exactly.
No, exactly.
You know, I'm glad we're doing a podcast because I got a face meant for radio. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
Damn right, I know what I'm talking about. I feel it every time I look in the mirror. Do you ever have any country CDs?
I don't know. Do you consider? Consider John Denver? Is he country?
I would consider him that, but I know what you mean. I know why you asked the question. I think he presented himself as that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Country like, roads. Right? Take me home.
And of course, I mean, Country Roads is a, it's got to be up there with Don't Stop Believing in terms of like karaoke songs.
You know? Sure. Oh, you know, yeah, it.
Absolutely. No doubt. I sang it karaoke in the shower the other night.
What did James think?
I knew.
I was throwing my underwear over the shower curtain.
See, it's just that kind of voice.
And I had a note attached that said, "I'll be waiting on the top bunk."
So the boxer brief just sailed over the top.
It did. I never saw it either. Landed on top of a shampoo bottle. Luckily, I was done with the shampoo. Shit.
You know, but having visited North Carolina a bunch, particularly the Charlotte area, you know, I see a big difference, I suppose, in North Carolina, Charlotte. You know, hey, look, man, I've had hibachi twice in Charlotte, man. Like I've had hibachi twice, so that seems to me like pretty non-rednecky.
And look, when we went in there and they knew who we were, remember?
They did.
They still won't give me their fucking, you know, samurai artwork.
Well, I mean, I think that's you gotta go in there and have a little discussion with that.
I may be able to get something.
The wife loves us, the guy hates us.
Absolutely. He's so mad. Like he's all mad all the time. And she's like, "Hey Chris, where's James?"
Yes.
And she knows my voice on the phone. She just she'll finish what I'm saying. Christian? Yep.
She does every time.
Every time.
Christian?
He might just be one of those, you know, grumpy Asian dudes, you know.
I think so. He wants to sit there and read his fucking newspaper.
The stock market.
He does. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. And he don't want to be bothered, but he'll take your fucking card.
But he would rather work whatever he's working than to hire somebody.
Exactly.
Because he needs that money to put on stocks.
Exactly.
And let alone deal with the inconvenience of paying customers, right?
Right. Yes. Exactly.
These guys rolling in here buying food.
I mean, he even fucking swipes your card mad.
He does.
Like, he's like, he's aggressive about it. He'll fucking sling aggressive. It back to you with the receipt and shit and all flapping in the wind.
Yes. He is. Of anywhere around here, he's the most aggressive card taker.
He's like, he swipes it hard, like it's going to charge more or something.
Hey, his tactics are working. I would never try to put moves on his wife.
Oh, God, no.
He would kill me.
He's got those ninja
hands. He's already
hands.
Intimidated me, with his card handling skills.
Card
handling. And his mean mugging me.
Well, you know, we got some martial arts related questions. So I feel like,
perfect. Really?
Into martial arts, right?
It's like we got these segues planned out.
I know.
I swear to God, we don't.
We got an Asian guy and an Asian stuff. So let's see. We got to hear from Mother Dragon. I got to rotate this around. Get some of the other folks involved. But Mother Dragon, as you know. I'm just reading her questions. She's, you know, I have studied the martial arts Shotokan since I was 14, had my own dojo for 11 years, unusual for a female back then. It saved my life. The media portrays karate as violence and without the most important spiritual aspects. The Karate Kid series was the first to actually come close. Cobra Kai seems to be trying. What are your thoughts about the spiritual aspects of the art in the martial arts? And maybe why that's essential more now than ever. And then I would just kind of dovetail onto that question. We should talk a little bit about Cobra Kai as well. That's a fun thing that's out there now, especially now that's on.
Yeah, I love that Cobra Kai is actually presenting that Johnny's the good guy.
Well, the narrative that was always missing was Johnny Lawrence wasn't the bad guy.
He was not.
He got this East Coast showboat coming in.
He did. Absolutely.
Girlfriend.
I mean, he's the one who fucked with his girlfriend on the beach. That started it. He was never fucking with him. And they actually play off that on Cobra Kai, and I love that they actually mention it.
Yeah, right. Doesn't he? He's got a line like, you started hitting on my girl.
Exactly.
Yeah, he says that.
He says that. Absolutely. They're playing off that, and it's absolutely true. I believe it. But no, for the serious question, I think it's absolutely super important. It's not about, you know, it goes into cliche kind of stuff. It's not about fighting. But I'll tell you what, it's missing in my life, even ever since I, you know, had to shut down my school and stop training. You know, that's when all this anxiety and shit we were talking about earlier creeps in, you know, as I'm older and single and all the stuff we were talking about. But I think it's absolutely important. And if more people did things like that and got offline, you know, off the internet, that's
for now. I don't want to interrupt. I'm saying you're only single for now. We've got.
Oh, well, yeah, right. Right. We might be swiping right or something. Like, Zoom is the manager here, apparently.
Smoke screen dating?
Yes. We need to start that website immediately. You know, that was one of the best times of my life, going back to all that stuff, too. It was kind of my calling at the time. And I think that's the core of what I try to do anyway, is some kind of teaching. So now, like, even on YouTube, I'm kind of transitioning. As I've learned the last 2 years writing, I'm trying to do writing stuff and whatever. But I really, really enjoyed that time of my life. It's something I miss a lot, and it was really cool to have. I think I told James this story. I had an old man come in who was a teacher, and he was watching his granddaughter. Because I had a very small, it was mostly adults I taught, so but we did have a small kids class, and he came in to watch that, and then an older grandson too, and he came up after and he said, you should be a teacher. I said, well, I am, you know. He said, no, I mean in school. And I thought, well, damn, that was a pretty cool fucking compliment. Probably the best I could get in that type of thing. You know, this older guy who was a teacher himself, however I interacted, whatever he was picking up, how I was interacting and whatever, making them understand kind of pretty complex things at that age, you know what I mean? But teaching in a fun way or whatever. So he picked up on that, and I thought that was really cool. But I think it's super important, and people don't, you know, because I got those questions. People came into the dojo. I had super religious people coming in thinking that we were doing some kind of weird Japanese meditation to some, you know, kami god or whatever of the sun. I got those because we wear, you know, black suits. I got those. Why are you wearing black? Or do y'all do any kind? Do y'all worship Buddha? I mean, just all kinds of shit like that. But, you know, you also had, I think, you know, he wants to learn some of this stuff. He's interested in it, but is it going to make him violent type thing?
Right.
And it's like, no, it's going to teach him not to be violent. It's exactly the opposite. People don't understand that. So it's a huge thing. And I think all parents should give their kids a chance, you know, at least put them in something when they're young. And if they decide they don't enjoy it, fine. But put them in something like that. You know what I mean? Be surprised.
But what about the, like, spiritual side of the arts kind of stuff,
if you will, right?
Do you teach?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of stuff like that goes into the
Well, you don't have to attach anything to it. In my case, being the Japanese stuff, with it has its roots in Shintoism, right? So you have roots there that you can kind of touch on, and it depends on the individual.
Is that mostly you tell them to kind of study that on their own outside of class, or was
you would never unless you had, like, for example, my teacher had a separate thing called the Blue Lotus Assembly, and that was there. It was not martial arts; it was all Shintoism type of stuff, you know, that type of thing, meditation.
Yeah.
It was a completely separate thing, but you can integrate that, and that's where some of the actual physical things and some of the not only techniques but some of the mental aspects of martial arts, or at least specifically the Japanese martial arts, came from anyway, just those kind of origins of Shintoism. So
yeah,
anyway, they're intertwined in there, but you wouldn't teach it outright like a religion or something, but it is there. There's an aspect,
right?
But when you start, that's the most important thing is you know, it's like when you teach a physical technique, you teach it over and over and over, and then you want them to forget it. And so it all goes back to the individual. If they pick up on some of that stuff and they start asking, Then they want to get deeper into the culture and then find out about
that would be
the
student I would be. Yeah.
Exactly. Then they want to find out, like, okay, what's behind all this? Why are you teaching, for example, this, you know, what is the idea of this water and earth and wind thing? And then you can go into the details of, you know, the origins, I guess you could say. So it's really cool, man. So you can take it and use it for what you want, essentially. You can use it for purely exercise, purely physical, for self-protection, all that kind of stuff. Or you can get completely deep into it and go to its roots. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
And get as spiritual as you want.
So you would never call it the religion of kicking ass. Wouldn't say
that. Not in class. but yes, it can be that too. I will say this, you do get this is typically older dudes. You get the people that come in and test you. There's always those dudes. But they want to get hit. They want to get hit. They do. And they will ask you.
So you get the guy that comes in and is like, you think you could take me?
You get the guy that comes in and he wants to be a part of the class. And then you realize that he's trying to actually, he wants you to do something hard. And he's testing you by actually swinging hard and fast and shit like that. Happened several times. One of my really good students, his name was Will, his brother came in like that, and he was just like, yeah, I'm gonna check it out, whatever. But then I tried to switch around and use people for examples, you know, different people and work with different people, obviously, when you're teaching something. And he was the guy who, like, you know, when you something's brand new, you go really slow at first and you're explaining the things behind it and whatever and the principle and whatever. And he's the guy who goes hard and fast, and then you have to react hard and fast. And you get slamming on his back, and then he goes, thank you. That's all I need to know. And then he was like, all in. You know what I mean? He's one of those. So you got that too. But it doesn't, if anything, it drives out the bullies.
And you would yell to the class, if a man confronts you on the street, he is your enemy.
That's exactly. Strike first, strike hard, no surrender.
The enemy deserves no mercy.
First day at Smokescreen Dojo, it's John Kreese.
Exactly. Of course.
Mercy is for the weak.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't break boards because boards don't hit back, you know. But I tell you what, man, that was it. It's still a part of me in some way, and I even started decorating stuff in here again in my bedroom with it, but.
Dude. Your dojo was awesome, and I don't know that I've seen any pictures. Did you take pictures? Do you have film?
I have pictures somewhere, and I have. Remember, I did DVD. I started doing DVDs, so I have some video from in there.
Of inside there. I mean, like, did you ever go in there and like go around just for that part of it? Just to
the
dojo.
Sure, I did when I first, especially when we were painting and putting mats in.
The pillars were the best with the rope on them. That looked awesome.
Yeah, we had to figure out a way to make those work in there, so I did that, and I did the Torrey gate on those, and my dad made those pads because they had some big giant concrete things at the bottom, and you're like, you can't leave that out. That's a damn lawsuit waiting to happen. So we had my dad make some custom padding to go around those concrete things, all kinds of stuff. So I'm sure I got picture and video somewhere. I found those tapes, by the way. I need to see what's on them. Those high eight tapes.
Did you?
I did.
Oh, good.
So if I can find, I got the camera, and now if I can get the cables, we'll plug it in somewhere.
Hell yeah.
That'd be cool. But yeah, man, I love it. And I've actually thought about recently. I told James I would like to get back into it, not necessarily full time all the time, but start. Because I can do things on my own, but I think I could use to go through some refresher stuff and just get back into it a little bit. I don't know. I may.
Get rid of all the furniture in your house, just the tatami mats, and you just kneeling and meditating everywhere.
Maybe. I got a mat in there from Japan.
Well, that was the other thing for kids, you know, back in the olden days, right? I mean, we had video games, but... You know, you had to play sports. You had to do some sort of martial arts, you know.
Yeah.
You were kind of expected to exercise.
Absolutely.
You really were.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. It was. They didn't want you in the fucking house until they called your name or the streetlights or whatever the rule was where in your neighborhood, you know.
Yeah, that's what made rainy days so cool is to spend those days, you know, in the house doing something like that. Video games and whatnot, or do the video games at night.
Because even though you got, you know, the NES came out, or, you know, after the Atari and all that stuff, and you got a little older, you still, you were excited about it, but you still went out and got on your bike or whatever. You still went outside.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, man, I started training with what I could, reading and videotapes and stuff like that, until 95 when the first dojo opened in North Carolina. And I drove for 2 hours, 2 to 3 times a week till 2008. And then that was when I had to close the school, when the economy crashed.
Was that before or after you learned, A, you had an identical twin brother, and before you also genetically realized you were 3% Asian?
That was all before. So it explains a lot.
It does.
It really does, man.
It's just always there.
It was always there. There was something, I just didn't understand the calling, you know?
It was, yeah.
So, yeah, it's in my blood, literally. I thought that was cool.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and not only that, it's not like, you know, it's not like the cartoons we had. We had Voltron, great, but it wasn't a lot of, like, anime, Japanimation, whatever they got, the Inuyasha, Dragon Ball Z, blah this, blah that. I mean, I had Tom and Jerry.
Exactly. Well, and I loved it. Still do.
As far as Japanese animation, we did have like Speed Racer and G-Force and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a few, but that's one thing that's odd, man. I've never gotten into like anime at all, you know, and we were a little too old for Dragon Ball Z. I think we were, when that stuff hit, for at least I never got into it. So I don't even know much about it, but that's one thing people ask a lot. I guess it somehow comes along with being on YouTube and Twitch. You're supposed to like love anime or something. And I just never got into it. But Japanese culture and all that, yeah, absolutely.
Food, yes. Culture, yes. Cartoons, no.
No, yes. But see, I'm weird though. I don't want to watch a Batman cartoon much. You know?
I know.
I really don't.
A lot of this new animated stuff, people ask me if I've seen it. I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. Our buddy Ho always, you need to watch this, you know, Batman, whatever thing.
Right.
It's like, it's a cartoon. I can't. It's just something weird. But Tom and Jerry, I watch all day.
Yeah, because DC is invested heavily in that whole animated, you know, animated Justice League kind of expanded universe.
Yeah, I keep hearing about Mark Hamill being the Joker and stuff.
Yeah, I've seen the clips and I've seen him do voice and other things. But yeah, I've never watched anything that's a cartoon, essentially.
I've watched them and they're enjoyable. But yeah, I don't get the people who are, you know, as fanatic about that as, you know, in some ways we are nerds for Game of Thrones. So,
right.
I'll be honest. If I'm going to watch a cartoon, it would be something like Family Guy or but again, I don't go seek that out. Usually I'm told about a funny clip
exactly.
or something and I'll watch it. But I would say the last cartoon, and I could be wrong, but the last cartoon that I watched regularly was Beavis and Butthead when it was actually on MTV.
Yeah, same here.
Once a week or whatever.
Like, you know, The Simpsons has been on, what, 45 fucking years?
Yeah,
I probably watched a little bit of that and then Beavis and Butthead, and that's about it, man. Just like you said, even like Family Guy, I know it's funny as hell.
It is.
And I've watched entire episodes of South Park, but I've never watched like the full thing.
And I own that Blue Harvest Star Wars Family Guy. I've watched that front to back, but I don't go back and back and back to it or anything.
Right.
But it is funny. That Blue Harvest is so funny.
So, fun trivia. Do you know where The Simpsons started out?
Yeah, her name?
Tracy
Ullman. Sure. Oh.
They were like those little 15-second clips between skits.
I remember telling somebody that before that watched The Simpsons. I was like, you realize where this started? They didn't. I don't know how many people knew that.
How many billions of dollars did they made off of that?
Yeah, tons.
It's insane.
You were a voice actor for that, you know, thinking, I got this little cartoon thing I'm going to do.
Yeah, right.
Kid who skateboards and says cowabunga.
Yes.
Exactly.
And you'd always see somebody with a Bart Simpson shirt in the beginning. Like Bart says cowabunga or something like that.
Right.
And there would be bootleg Bart Simpson shirts and stuff. I think we sold them at the video store I worked at.
Y'all saw bootleg.
Bootleg Bart Simpson shirts.
Yeah, that was huge for a while, man.
It was really big. It
blew up.
In indirect violation of licensing and copyright.
We don't condone that kind of thing here.
It was like Napster, right? It was like Napster back in the day.
Yes.
Download too
it
much.
Really was.
Exactly.
Think about it.
Napster.
Oh, Napster. We watched.
Dude, I loved Napster. I mean, I was all in when it came
to
Napster.
It was cool as shit. The concept was cool.
It really was. I was addicted.
I mean,
I couldn't wait to get home from work to download more and burn more CDs.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, it was the free music, but the it was some aspect. For me, I was getting into tech stuff then. It was the aspect of, you know, the torrent, you know, pulling from all these different places. I love that. But, you know, it was free fucking music.
You know, I'm sure somewhere I still have songs from, you know, whatever, call it 2000 or something that I probably did download off of Napster or LimeWire.
Yeah, LimeWire was another.
Yeah,
exactly.
BearShare or whatever.
Yeah.
But I hated it when I would get a file. I'd see a file. It'd be like, just for instance, like pour some sugar on me, yes. And it would have poison as the artist or something. I hated it when they were mislabeled because I know that messed a lot of people up, you know?
I remember, though, a lot of people would say, well, you know, if I like it, I'll go buy the... And you actually... I did do that. I know people that did that.
Yeah, I never gave up on buying music.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah.
It made me sometimes go buy the thing. Because in those days, you still want the physical thing to read the insert and whatever.
Yeah.
Read the lyrics. That was the only way to read the
lyrics. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I still have a lot of CDs, and the only cases I kept with overall like the Tupac collection, but God, I had a billion tapes and CDs. Rewind. The coolest thing ever invention was when it would rewind and stop between a song. That was like, oh my God. Check this out, man. I can hit rewind. It'll fucking stop. It knows when
I only had one car like that, dude. I love that stereo.
No, I was just saying like that feature where it could the audio sensor.
Yes. You know
where the gap in the song was, and you just press search. Oh, I don't like this song.
That was so cool.
That was high-end technology, boy, at the time.
We're going to be flying cars. Flying cars are around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. They were always supposed to be.
I know, and honestly, I say this probably every time we record, but kids have no idea.
They have no idea.
Like how exciting that was.
We thought by 2020, I mean, hell, you think about it. We were talking about that the other night with something we were watching. Something was going to be set in like 2024.
Oh, no, it was 1997.
That's right, yeah.
Escape from New York was
that's
set
right.
In 1997.
Escape from New York. We were talking about that old classic.
That's
and we're here. We are in 2020. Where's the flying cars and shit? Because we all saw Back to the Future.
Yeah, man, the hoverboards.
Yeah,
man.
DeLorean.
Exactly. Now they got the real shoes, but hoverboards, you have to stay on some kind of pad because of a superconductor, whatever. Anyway,
all those movies that talked about the future, Blade Runner.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrong.
Again, 2015 is gonna be 2015 is gonna be crazy.
Yes,
exactly.
You're going to be living on the moon by 2015.
Yeah, moon bubbles. That was the thing. But now, as 2020, we're all stuck in our little bubbles at home. Because we can't leave.
That's right.
During that hard lockdown phase, I think there was a 72-hour span. I didn't open my front door, so I didn't even go outside for 72 hours.
Yeah, see, that's crazy, man. I don't see how y'all look out and see concrete and just... I mean, I know there's parks and shit, but still.
City living.
Yeah, they just keep building up. And now they're trying to do the little gardens on the patio. Hey, look, I got a tree.
Hell yes. I'd be doing the same thing. I'd have to.
There's no way. Cannot not do it.
And you'd be hoping there'd be like a bird nest in it.
Exactly. Look, birds.
Squirrel come on your tree.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got mice and cockroaches. I mean,
they got wildlife.